but
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to XBN Blog Talk Radio. My name is Holly Pottle, and I'm going to be hosting today. And our topic for today is the prostitution decriminalization initiative that made it onto the San Francisco ballot. Our guests will be Starchild and Maxine Dugan of the Erotic Service Providers Union. And the Erotic Service Providers Union is a group that really spearheaded this initiative. If you'd like to call in at any time during the broadcast, you know, we encourage you to do so. The number is 646-200-3135. And we have Maxine with us right now. Starchild is running a little late because he has another interview to do this morning, so hopefully he'll join us soon. So welcome, Maxine.
Thanks, Holly. Thanks for having us on this morning. You know, it's really important to, in the media requests, to the barrage of media requests that we are receiving, to, you know, speak to the sex worker rights faithful about what's going on in the campaign and keep everybody in tune to that, because your participation is very important to us.
Can you provide an overview basically about what this petition is about and what this petition will do, like the purpose of it?
Yes, Holly. The petition says that the City of San Francisco can no longer allocate funds towards the investigation and prosecution of for prostitution. It also says that the city has to stop operating the scheme called the First Offender Prostitution Program, which is the way that the city, one of the ways that the city profits off the criminalization of prostitution. It also says that the city police department cannot receive any funds from the state or feds or in the form of grants to racially profile sex industry workers under the guise of rescuing them for us, as the case may be.
Yeah.
So those are the three main points about this. Oh, there's Starchild.
Oh, hi, Starchild. Starchild just joined us. Welcome, Starchild. Maxine's just providing an overview of what the petition's about.
Yeah, I just got the tail end of that.
Okay.
Cool. So anyway, that's basically what the petition is about. The petition is a worker-based initiative, Holly. You know, when we were out getting signatures on the street for the last 4 months, we had a lot of opportunity to talk to people and educate people about what our worker-based issues are and why this ballot initiative is necessary, why we haven't been successful in getting the Board of Supervisors here in San Francisco to implement the most important recommendation from the Task Force on Prostitution, which is to decriminalize prostitution and decriminalize sex workers. So, you know, we've had to be on the streets and take our solution to our problem to the people. And, you know, our petition is the second time we've circulated it. It's part of the long overall plan to decriminalize prostitution at the local, state, and federal level. So, you know, we have a long-term plan about that, and this is just one of those steps.
Worldwide for you.
Exactly. So then this, even though the petition's in San Francisco, this isn't just a San Francisco issue. It's really a sex workers' rights issue on a larger scale. Could have, you know, real national implications here, and this is really just an important step in terms of getting the ball rolling towards decriminalizing prostitution across the nation and hopefully ultimately across the world. Did you have anything to add, Star Child?
Sure. I would say, I like to talk about it in terms of sex work and not just sex workers, because for every sex worker, there's multiple clients, who are also criminalized in most cases here. So, we're a bigger movement than many of us sometimes even realize and talk about. There's a lot of people being negatively impacted by these unfortunate laws.
Absolutely. And can you discuss, ways that the criminalization of prostitution is harming the people who work in the sex industry? Because I don't know if a whole lot of people are really aware of how harmful these laws are to people who work in the sex industry, to people who work in prostitution.
Pretty basic, really. I mean, you think of any profession, it's like, well, if you make the profession illegal, is that going to hurt the people who work in that industry? Well, of course it is. It's like, it doesn't matter whether you're an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer, if you make it illegal to, design buildings or to treat patients or to, represent people in court, then, you're going to obviously interfere with those people's ability to do their job. You're creating a black market, and it's going to create other types of violence and crime and all sorts of problems that, many people find, unfortunately, now they've come to associate with prostitution, but it's really not prostitution that's causing those problems. It's the fact that we've been criminalized.
Exactly. So when you I'm sorry, Maxine, go ahead.
I was just going to piggyback on that and say, specifically for sex industry workers, we have suffered a special kind of persecution and prosecution from having our occupation criminalized. The anti-prostitution laws started out over 100 years ago. They started out around anti-zoning laws, trying to zone us out of business. It's not illegal to be a prostitute. What's illegal now is our ability to speak, our ability to negotiate for our own labor, and negotiate for our own safe work conditions. So, at the state level, the criminalization of prostitution laws are badly written. And so in trying to craft some language for our petition that addresses the local practice of enforcing the anti-prostitution laws, which is arbitrary and caters to corruption, it was even a bigger challenge to write that initiative and to bring the focus back to workers being at the center. How are we as workers going to get to the center of our own advocacy and of our own agency in determining and being self-determined to enfranchise ourselves under the laws that already exist, under the laws that already, criminalize things like rape, robbery, theft, coercion? How are we going to get the police department and society to take us seriously when we have been victims of those crimes? And instead, we see law enforcement efforts geared towards being lately around the trafficking stuff. They're all pimp obsessed and they're all sex trafficked obsessed, but they're not really about how to enfranchise workers, how to enfranchise migrant workers, and how it is that we're going to bring people equal protection under the law, like every other worker in the United States of America.
Exactly. And something that I think is important for people to be aware of is that under the criminalization of prostitution, like when you start talking about abuse against sex workers, in some cases it's these law enforcement officials who are perpetrating the abuses and using the criminalization of prostitution to get away with it. And that's something that I think may fall under a lot of people's radar, is this whole issue of law enforcement abuse, how the criminalization of prostitution really encourages this.
Certainly. Yeah, and we probably don't hear, most of those cases, because it would be a case of, some police officer somewhere arresting somebody and saying, well, just kind of make this go away if you give me a blowjob, or, you know, you can pay a little fine here right now, and, you know, I won't take you to jail and book you.
Exactly. And we have a caller on the line called the Ozone. Are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Doing great, thanks. Do you have a question or comment?
Well, yeah, I have a question. How much do these sex workers charge for their service? Aren't they? I mean, don't they charge really a price that seems to be it seems to be taking advantage of people? I mean, how much does it charge for an hour with a prostitute?
It's market driven. It's based on supply and demand. I mean, like any service, but when you have a black market, you know, based on criminalization, then of course prices tend to rise. You know, the same as any time you create illegality, because people are taking that extra risk of being arrested and so forth, and you know, the market prices tend to reflect that.
Well, my response to that question is that it's not about how much sex workers charge. You know, how much we charge has not resulted in being enfranchised under the equal protection under the law. And that's really our issue. It sounds like the caller's issue is that, you know, he's concerned about being taken advantage of. He's concerned about the price being too high. And those are separate issues from what our particular petition is addressing here in San Francisco. You know, in San Francisco, we talk a lot about class. You know, it doesn't matter. And in the Erotic Service Providers Union, we talk about, you know, everybody is a worker. It doesn't matter if you're charging $20 for your service or you're charging $200 or $2,000 for your service. Nobody has equal protection under the law. And when we're being targeted for arrest and prosecution for working, everybody ends up in the same boat, which is that we all end up in jail. We all end up being trafficked through these sex-negative, shame-based, you know, charity services because we've been put out of work, you know, so that now we become a burden on the public resources, essentially. So, you know, we want to stop that practice here locally in San Francisco, and we want to really focus on how it is we're going to enfranchise workers under the equal protection laws, labor laws, civil laws, and criminal laws.
And just to add to what Maxine said, I don't think that how much a sex worker charges should really have anything to do with the legal status of prostitution. Regardless of whether a sex worker charges a lot of money or not, they shouldn't be persecuted for providing consensual sexual services in exchange for payment. And if you don't want to pay somebody's prices, then, you know, you have the option not to and go elsewhere or just not use the services at all. But regardless of what a sex worker charges, he or she should not be arrested for their work. And I think that's more the bottom line here. So I don't really think how much somebody charges is really the main issue when we're talking about decriminalization of prostitution.
I think
I'm sorry, what's that?
I'm sorry, the price is just one point, but I think that the main issue for me, looking, and I understand the idea that, you know, the police should not be arresting people for doing things that they both consent. Human nature is the issue of human nature and the nature of sex and the nature of the fact that it's very hard for men to resist. And it's going to be family, sex addiction, and, you know, I think that for the fabric of society, if prostitution.
Is it just me, or is the call really breaking up there? I'm only getting part of your words there.
I can only understand about every sixth word that he says, so I'm sorry, I'm not able
it's
to understand.
A little
understand
bit of bad connection.
Concerned.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like the gist, you know, what he's saying. if I get this wrong, you let me know. But it sounds like you're saying, you know, there's a power imbalance that men are actually at a disadvantage. And, I mean, that issue could be debated, but I think I would actually encourage you to talk about this, because a lot of the opposition to decriminalization is based on, you know, people feeling like, well, you know, we need these laws because prostitution is really bad because women are being exploited by it, you know. And I think that the concerns that you raise can help people see the other side of that equation and to realize, you know, a lot of these women aren't necessarily being exploited, and also, of course, not just women who are prostitutes, but, you know, that's another issue as well.
Yeah, and to add to that, something else I have kind of difficulty with is this whole, like, dichotomizing of power. Like, either it's the client who has the power over the prostitute or the prostitute who has the power over the client. But not all sex workers necessarily think of their work in that way. To some sex workers, it's like they're just providing a service and getting paid for it. So it's not like you're in complete control of them or they're in complete control for you. You're providing a service and getting compensated for your time. So there's not everybody necessarily sees it as this power dichotomy where either one side is always in control.
Well, Holly, what I want to really respond to around the issue of power is that, you know, we had to stand on the street corner for 4 months to gather enough signatures this time to put our issues before the San Francisco voters, okay? It's the voters who have the power over our industry, because prostitution is criminalized at the state level. It's enforced at the local level. That's who our bosses are, okay? Our bosses are the people who get to say, you know, if we get to work today or not. Right? Our bosses are the ones that get to say, oh, you get to go to jail today. We're going to put you out of work. We're going to deprive you of the right to support yourself and your children. So, you know, we need to go beyond the male, female, worker, client, you know, issues. I mean, I think those are definitely interesting issues. We can talk about those, but that is not the issue that this ballot initiative is focusing on. It's the voters, it's the legislatures, you know, it's the people who really have the power over our industry. And when you hold that kind of power over a group of workers, you know, I think that that is wrong. The aim of this initiative is to decriminalize prostitution so that workers can be at the center of any laws or regulations, being able to access equal protection under the law. That is aim, the sole aim of this particular piece of legislation. We can't fix everything that's wrong with the world in terms of the male-female dynamic in our little piece of legislation. We can't be expected, you know, to fix, you know, all the sexual and economic imbalance that is occurring across the globe, you know, under multinational corporatism, for Christ's sake. Come on. You know, these are badly written laws. We're only able to address them at the local level in terms of their implementation and their practice. And the goal here is to bring workers some enfranchisement.
And there's actually been a report out of New Zealand where they have decriminalized prostitution, and it found that the sex workers do have more agency, you know, do have more workers' rights and more control over their own lives, over their occupation and everything. So the sex workers in New Zealand have actually reported having higher levels of agency in their work since the decriminalization of prostitution had passed there.
I would imagine that's also given, you know, clients as well, not only just more security in terms of them not being arrested also when they go to see a provider, but more, you know, assurance when they go see somebody they're not going to be cheated or ripped off or, you know, threatened by a pimp or this kind of thing. So, I think, you know, decriminalization really benefits the whole community. And, you know, as a result of these negative interactions not happening, it doesn't create the kinds of problems that sometimes spill over into, you know, neighborhood and the kind of things that give prostitution a bad image for people who aren't involved in transactions as well, so it benefits them too.
That's good, and I think it's important to think of the client element also, like decriminalizing the clients, because there are some people who, you know, will argue for this Swedish model, like, oh yeah, go and arrest those clients. But what's happened is that the Swedish prostitutes have reported that their work's become more dangerous since this legislation has passed, because when you start criminalizing the clients and pushing the clients further underground, you're doing the same to the workers, and you're making their work more dangerous, giving them less agency. So the sex workers in New Zealand have reported, you know, very different results than the sex workers in Sweden have. Like, the sex workers in New Zealand have reported more agency since this legislation has passed, whereas the sex workers in Sweden have reported really having less agency, and that their work's become more scary, that their client base has become, I guess, a bit creepier, for lack of a better term, since the legislation that criminalizes the clients passed there. So for anybody who thinks the Swedish legislation is good legislation, I mean, you really need to listen to the sex workers, because if you do, then it definitely seems like decriminalization is the best route to go.
That's a really good point, Holly. I appreciate you, you know, bringing that
perspective. I'm having a little trouble hearing you, Starchild.
Yeah, I can't hear you, and you're talking really fast, so I'm having a really difficult time understanding what you're saying.
Okay, we're sorry, we don't need to be like so difficult, we're just having trouble. Much better.
That's better? Okay. Yeah, I was just saying I appreciate you bringing that, you know, perspective on the international laws, and, you know, I think that's helpful for people to know and to understand that we do need to, you know, bring the whole community along.
Well, in bringing the whole community along, when I wrote the ballot initiative, I wrote it so that, you know, it was decriminalization for all, you know, everybody, you know, to stop the enforcement of all the prostitution laws and stop the city from profiting off the criminalization of prostitution, you know, in saying that the city police department can no longer receive grants from the state and federal agencies to racially profile workers under the guise of, you know, rescuing us. You know, we feel it's really important to bring in equal protection for workers who are undocumented, you know, for workers that, you know, and to all the street-based workers. You know, everybody needs to have equal access to equal protection under the criminal, labor, and civil laws. And that's a very important, you know, enfranchisement. You know, we're not going to be sectioning off certain groups and pitting people against each other or sacrificing one group, you know, for another. In terms of the clients specifically, you know, they get the equal they need to have that equal protection too. And recently there was a study that was funded by the federal government talking about, you know, how great the first offender prostitution is in terms of reducing recidivism. But the truth is that it's a really bad piece of the study is very flawed. It makes, you know, bad conclusions or erroneous conclusions, you know, based on their bad research. Because their agenda is to promote the idea that criminalizing, you know, our customers and diverting, you know, our potential income through the police state is the best that we can do as a society. And it is not the best that we can do as a society. You know, this business of profiting off the criminalization of prostitution, whereby the San Francisco Police Department, the District Attorney's Office, and the SAGE Project get to split those fees that people have to pay to go through their shame-based sex-negative program is not the best that we can do. We don't need the shame-based sex-negative traffic school to educate our customers about how to practice safe sex. We have been able to practice. We have been able to practice safe sex, you know, on our jobs, and we want the right to be able to do that. You know, carrying condoms can get somebody arrested. You know, and that's why we have to stop the enforcement of the prostitution laws, because we need, that's one of the ways we have to be at the center in, you know, leading our own health and safety.
next, if I could just interject and say something too about that study. You know, I think one of the things they're probably missing in looking at the recidivism rate is the fact that, you know, the clients who get caught once and are forced into this program, you know, they're going to be more cautious in the future. It's not necessarily that they're not seeing prostitutes anymore, it's just they're not getting caught again. You know, they're being more careful. I think that could account for a lot of their statistics there.
Well, you know, the customers are being subjected to the same kinds of harassment that we see workers being subjected to here in San Francisco,
yeah.
In that they can't arrest us, you know, for prostitution necessarily, but what they start doing is following us around, harassing us, issuing us citations for loitering, right? They
you know,
stand outside.
They were even confiscating people's cars, you know, for a while. Unfortunately, the state courts have shot that practice down. But, you know, they were seizing people's cars who had not even been arrested for anything. Just driving around in the wrong neighborhood, they'd say, oh, you're, you know, trying to solicit prostitution. You know, we're going to take your car, and it's up to you to prove that you weren't committing any crime in order to get your car back.
Huh.
This is the kind of thing they would like to do if they can get away with it, you know.
Yeah. Sort of like guilty until proven innocent, which is totally unconstitutional, like the thought police. You're like, they're going to get in your head and somehow tell you what you're thinking.
Well, they've already, you know, we've lost our privacy in terms of what Nancy Pelosi just did recently, you know, in voting to continue the spy, you know, spying on Americans. So, yes, we have lost all of our privacy. None of our thoughts and our writings and our communications, you know, are private anymore. Hello. I mean, we, you know, we have to have, you know, our privacy because of all the negative stigma that has been promoted through the 100 years of criminalization of prostitution. And, you know, it's the negative stigma that, you know, is going to take a long time to dissipate. I mean, look at what's happening to, you know, black Americans. They abolished slavery, you know, 100 plus years ago, but we still see all this negative racial stigma being used as a basis for discrimination and economic opportunities. And so, you know, prostitution and the industry of prostitution is, and the customers are going to be in that same boat together for a long time.
Yeah. And I know, like, I worked on Measure Q, also called Angels Initiative, back in 2004 in Berkeley. And one of the things that we've experienced was just a lot of misinformation, all these, like, moral panics being created, you know, to try to stop the initiative, which would have basically symbolically decriminalized prostitution. So, and I'm kind of noticing the same thing here. Like, I was reading an article that appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle called Prostitution Measure Makes It Onto SF Ballot. It's by Aaron Alday. And there's some real misinformation in here provided basically by Mayor Newsom and District Attorney Harris. It's directly from the article. It says, Mayor Gavin Newsom this week said the measure would severely hamper the city's ability to investigate and prosecute sex trafficking cases. And then a few lines down, Kamala Harris, very similar thing. It's a direct quote from her. It would make it very challenging to investigate and prosecute human trafficking, agreed San Francisco District Attorney Kamala Harris. We need to use police resources to investigate where there is a suspicion that women and children, in particular immigrants, are being exploited. This measure is nothing more than a welcome mat for prostitutes and pimps to come and hang out in San Francisco, she said. And would you please like to respond to that and just clarify this misinformation?
Well, I would love to respond to Kamala Harris's statement that it brings out the welcome mat, you know, for prostitutes and pimps. I mean, Kamala Harris, you know, has publicly stated that, you know, she is herself, in fact, an honorary sex worker. So, you know, if she's afraid of some competition, you know, maybe that's what she's talking about there, right? You know, the deal is that with this initiative,
when did she say that? Do you remember?
She said that to us at the Harvey Milk Democratic Club last fall when she came and asked for our endorsement for district attorney when she was running unopposed.
Yeah, Foxy is really amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, she's an honorary sex worker.
She pretty much got her start in politics as Willie Brown's girlfriend, you know, at a time when Willie Brown, the former mayor of San Francisco, was in fact married, you know. It raises this question, you know, well, exactly what was her her status or role there? Maybe she wasn't technically calling herself a prostitute at the time, but
apparently she is now.
In fact, there's
so much
difference to us. What's that?
Apparently she is calling herself one now, apparently. And she's afraid of a little competition, you know, because she ran unopposed, you know, for district attorney, you know, here in this last election, this last November. You know, and the truth is that Holly
now is, you know, running for governor, and I'm sure that he sees this as an excellent way to try to show the state voters that, oh, he's not really liberal, you know, he's defending San Francisco against prostitutes, you know.
he doesn't have any high moral ground to stand on. I mean, come on, this is a mayor whose own actions to have sex with one of his employees, someone under his employment, who was married to his campaign manager, while they were drunk, got her pregnant. Come on. You know, you can't be so pimp-obsessed and so sex-trafficking-obsessed and, you know, put yourself and pimp yourself out there as this hero rescuer daddy person when really what it is that you're doing is you're just posturing. You know, they don't care about people who are involved in trafficking people and forced and fraud labor. You know, if that were the case, Holly, you know, nobody has even been charged or convicted under the state anti-trafficking statute, okay? So, you know, when the city controller's office does their statement about where that money for enforcing prostitution is coming from and where it is going, the city of San Francisco and the United States of America is going to see the hypocrisy and see what's involved here. You can't be saying you're concerned about one thing and passing laws about one thing when really what you're doing is something else. And it's hypocrisy, and we're going to put a stop to it right here in San Francisco.
Exactly. And it's like this whole myth that decriminalizing prostitution would make it harder to prosecute trafficking cases, which is totally false. I mean, when you decriminalize prostitution, all you're really decriminalizing is consensual sex acts for payment. You're not decriminalizing like human trafficking. And what happens is that when you criminalize prostitution, then the focus shifts towards persecuting sex workers and away from stopping the actual cases of human trafficking that occurred, which is why, you know, we now have anti-trafficking policies, or certain anti-trafficking policies, I should say so-called anti-trafficking policies, that focus more on persecuting sex workers than on stopping human trafficking, because that's what happens when you criminalize prostitution, is it's like it's almost persecuting sex workers becomes a guise for fighting human trafficking, even though persecuting sex workers really does nothing to stop human trafficking, and it really wastes resources that can be used for more constructive causes.
Well, it's not only that.
People are afraid to come forward, you know, if they're going to be subject to arrest themselves, where, for example, a client maybe would go to see somebody and see indications that the person is being held there against their will. Well, if the client is going to be at risk of being arrested or prosecuted by coming forward with that information, then they're less likely to do so.
Well, the other issue is, too, is that, Holly, in the national or at the federal level, there's that really bad piece of legislation that looks to not only make all workers and our customers federal felons and eligible for 10 years in prison, but it also makes it so that workers are no longer, or people who are actual victims of rape, robbery, theft, coercion, never are, their testimony isn't even needed in order to convict perpetrators of those crimes. And the Federal Justice Department opposes that legislation because it's going to be so difficult to navigate. It's going to be difficult to prosecute people. It's going to be difficult. It's going to, you know, be subjected to loads of challenges under the Constitution. It's going to tie up a lot of resources in order to do that. It's not the best use of our time. It's not the best use of our resources. And for God's sake, you can get the workers, our own buy-in on being witnesses on our own behalf, you know, if you want to enfranchise us. But workers are not going to come forward and make those statements when, you know, the police are deporting us, for Christ's sake. How are you going to get workers to come forward and participate in our own agency on our own behalf when, you know, you're going to in turn investigate us for prostitution? You know, when we went to Kamala...
The way they've gotten this, some of the so-called trafficking, few trafficking arrests that they have gotten is by basically threatening to deport the workers if they don't testify against their managers. I mean, it gives them sort of an incentive to say, oh, yeah, I'm here because I was trafficked, when that may not really be the case. I mean, if it's like, say you were trafficked and get to stay here in the country, or say you were here by choice and be deported, you know, it's sort of creating incentives for people to give the answers that you want to hear.
And that's an important point to bring up because in the world we live in, a lot of people cross borders to make a living, and some of those people work in the sex industry, and it's very xenophobic to assume that they're all trafficking victims, and that does nothing, you know, to stop the actual trafficking that does occur. I mean, the xenophobia is really just resulting in sex workers being arrested and deported, and it's really, you know, it's really just a horrible thing. And I know that you address this in your, I was reading the actual language of the petition, and it says right here, San Francisco's law enforcement agency shall not apply nor receive federal and state monies that institute racial profiling as a means of targeting alleged traffic victims under the guise of enforcing the abatement of prostitution laws. So in other words, this really addresses how law enforcement can no longer use money that's supposed to be about fighting human trafficking and taking this money to go and arrest sex workers, which is, like I said, what's happening under some of these anti-trafficking laws. And in terms of racial profiling, Asian women, women of Asian descent, are being particularly targeted by this profiling, by these mass raids and arrests and deportations of sex workers that's happening under legislation that's supposed to be about stopping human trafficking.
Well, Howie, I've gone...
Just really quick, I was going to say, you know, an example of this might be they find a massage parlor where all the workers happen to be Asian, you know, a lot of them are immigrants from China, you know, that they would assume, oh, you know, because there's a lot of immigrant women here, well, they must have been trafficked. You know, that's the kind of racial profiling that's going on.
Well, and I've gone into the parlors and actually talked to the workers, Holly, and nobody has ever registered anybody to vote in all the times that they've been raided and rescued, right? That's not, you know, enfranchising workers is not anybody's priority besides the erotic service providers unions, okay? You know, this whole business that, you know, the Asian massage parlor workers are angry about the way they're being depicted in the media, and they have no voice to respond. They have no means to stand up and say, that is incorrect. How dare you interpret me on your own racist terms, you know, by the media. The media has treated workers, sex industry workers in general, horribly. They have not done any justice to our issue. They haven't, you know, all they care about is what the caller said. how much do you charge? And those are not our issues, and they need to be paying attention to what our issues are. The other thing is that on the issue, you know, clients have been the people who have actually facilitated workers getting out of exploitative situations. We see this over and over again on the international, national, and local level here. And the clients need to be taking the risk. I know it's difficult, but they need to be taking the opportunity to shout out about the good work that they have done and the place that the roles that they have played in bringing relief to workers, because nobody else is doing that.
Exactly.
I think I could just say, follow up on the last comment I made too, that I meant to mention that, you know, if you look at most immigrant businesses in the community, you know, it shouldn't be any surprise or somehow an automatic indication that there's trafficking involved just because, say, a massage parlor has primarily, you know, immigrant women from a particular country, because in immigrant communities, often you'll find a lot of family-based businesses, a lot of people, you know, from similar backgrounds, working together in various occupations. Like you see, for example, a lot of Indian families own motels, a lot of Cambodian families own donut shops, you know, and they'll bring in their relatives to work in these businesses. You know, you see a lot of new immigrants clustered together. It doesn't mean that they're trafficked or that they're forced into this. It's just how the economic models tend to work.
Exactly. So it's very important to look beyond the surface and see what's really going on here, rather than just assuming that, gosh, every migrant woman who works in the sex industry is a trafficking victim, because not only is that incorrect, but it's harming the people who work in the sex industry. What this is resulting in are, you know, people in the sex industry being arrested under, you know, like I said, the guise of fighting human trafficking, and it's because of this equation of all sex work with trafficking that this is happening, or all sex industry work with trafficking, that, you know, we have these mass arrests against sex workers happening under supposedly attempts to fight human trafficking. Yeah, so
well,
it's...
But Holly, we have to look at what has caused the large migration across the globe, and what has caused that are multinational corporatisms that have been enabled by really bad trade agreements. I mean, when we look at Cambodia in specific, we can see how it is that the U.S. Policies, foreign policies, around the Monetary Fund, the International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organizations, have come in and implemented these trade policies that have taken away the resources, the subsistence rights from indigenous peoples, and then forced them to migrate. Mm-hmm. And then additionally, on top of that, you see the U.S. sex-negative, shame-based policies in the Anti-Trafficking Protection Act lay down heavy penalties onto countries like Cambodia and Korea for having legalized brothels and the legalized sex industry, you know, where there's already, you know, some forms of decriminalization and legalization already going on, so that workers can be at the center of their own agency. And so it's been the U.S. policies that have forced those countries to shut down what's already going on in their particular parts of the world and force those workers to migrate. I mean, it was in 2004 that they outlawed all the brothels in Korea, in South Korea, and over 2,000 workers go on a hunger strike. Those sex workers go on a hunger strike because they have been put out of work through threat of economic sanctions by the United States onto the South Korean government, right? And then all of a sudden, in 2005, here in San Francisco, we've got a big sex trafficking scandal here, you know, where 105 people are arrested, and then of that group, 58 get deported. I mean, it's just part of the scheme and the cycle about how the U.S. policies are all in conflict with each other. They're not in line with anything that is worker-based, worker health and safety-centered. And that's what our aim is to do here at the Erotic Service Providers Union. And anybody can go to our site. It's www.espu-ca.org, Or you can just Google the Erotic Service Writers Union.
Exactly. And there's also, for anybody who's listening, there's also a copy of the actual initiative on the ESP website, so you can read that directly. And something else that I found on the front page of the Erotic Providers Union website was information about the situation in Cambodia, because I know you brought up Cambodia, so just kind of elaborate on that a little bit. Basically, what's happened is that under pressure from the U.S. government, Cambodia passed anti-prostitution legislation that equated all prostitution with trafficking. So what happened as a result is that there were mass arrests against Cambodian sex workers where they were being taken to detention centers and routinely gang-raped, robbed, beaten by police and guards. And not only that, but HIV-positive sex workers are being denied needed medical care, and three sex workers have died in police custody. And again, there's information about that on the ESP website, also on the front page. So I encourage people, please go educate yourself about this, find out what's happening under these policies, because it's important to know the implications of these policies and how they're affecting people. Something else I wanted to ask you about is the San Francisco Task Force on Prostitution. Because I was reading in your initiative that one of the main things this initiative requires is that the city implement the recommendations of the San Francisco Task Force on Prostitution, which is these recommendations were basically made back in 1996, and it's 12 years later, and these recommendations have still been largely ignored by public policymakers, even though it was the Board of Supervisors who put together this task force, and this task force did some really thorough research, but nonetheless, the recommendations have still been largely ignored. So one of the things I think is great about this initiative is that you're requiring the city to actually implement the recommendations from the San Francisco Task Force on Prostitution. So can you talk a little bit about that and what exactly the task force recommended? Because I know that the task force recommended the decriminalization of prostitution.
Well, do you want to talk about it more, Jeff?
Sure. There's another website called bayswan.org, bayswan.org. And if you go to that site and then type in after that /sftfc.html, you can see the San Francisco Task Force report on prostitution. And, you know, it's fairly lengthy, but the main, central thing that came out of it, I think, was recommending decriminalization. And basically, it was composed of 28 members representing a broad cross-section of San Francisco with regard to race, ethnicity, gender, gender identity, age, socioeconomic status, and sexual orientation. And they did a comparative study of current prostitution laws and regulations in other cities of the United States and internationally, and came up with these recommendations. So yeah, I completely agree with Maxine. I think that it's way past time that they should be implemented, and that's part of what this this measure is designed to do.
Well, additionally, beyond in the specifics of the Task Force on Prostitution's recommendations are linked on our site. You know, under the documentation for the initiative for 2008, you know, you can see some of the recommendations. I'm sorry about that, about the call waiting that keeps clicking in, about the Task Force on Prostitution. In the title and summary written by the city attorney's office this time for the initiative, it's dramatically different from, interestingly enough, the title and summary that was written for the same initiative 2 years ago. So this time in this year's title and summary, we see that the city attorney's office has at least referenced some of the, or at least all of the recommendations that have been implemented under the, so far in the last 12 years. And, you know, what we see is that some of those recommendations are not, haven't been done in a way that's been really helpful to the workers. For example, the agent, you know, for example, the massage parlor workers. They supposed the recommendation was to remove the criminality from people being able to apply and receive permits to work in massage parlors, the establishments as well as the workers. But what we saw happen when the actual massage ordinance was passed in 2002 is that they kept that criminality in place, but added an additional layer of administration by keeping it so that people had to go to the police department to put down their fingerprints, pay for the privilege, sit next to you know, real sexual perpetrators, so that they could apply for, at the public health department, administration of the permitting system. So now you have an additional layer put on top of workers about how it is that they have to go apply to even get a permit just to even go to work, right? And now we see
the state becoming our pimp.
Yeah, the state's our pimp. This is funny. The Department of Public Health is our pimp now, right? Because now there's a whole set of regulations that have been mandated and are being regularly enforced, whereby, for example, they have taken $71,000 in fines and fees off of those massage parlor workers over the last 5 years that those regulations have been implemented. So now we see a new revenue stream for the city, whereby they are fining people for having their necks showing of all things.
Oh gosh.
So yeah. So you know, this is not how we envisioned, and I'm sure it's not how the Task Force on Prostitution envisioned this kind of decriminality to take place for those workers. You know, and in fact, the city has done not a great job of implementing these recommendations, and by passing this ordinance, it will force the city to implement all these recommendations. And probably one of the most important regulations that people, or recommendations that people want to know about, is that it mandates that the city will have to start to lobby the state to repeal the state criminalization of prostitution laws. And that's very important. You know, that's how the state of California was able to repeal the sodomy laws. They stopped the enforcement here in San Francisco. And generally at the statewide level, those sodomy laws were used as a means to discriminate against homosexual people, along with some other, you know, bad female impersonation kinds of laws. And then it was the San Francisco city that went and started to, and legislators that started to lobby at the state level to repeal that bad law. And so we're mimicking some of what has already been successful on those levels.
Well, absolutely. So, like, San Francisco is, like, kind of leading the way to social justice in some senses. Just we have, like, 7 minutes left, so I'm wondering if E. Maxine and Starchild could pretty much tell people or let people know how they can become involved in campaigning for this important initiative.
Well, I realize probably most of your listeners are not in San Francisco. This is, I guess, an internet show, so people could even be listening from other countries. But there's still important things that you can do. Certainly you can send donations. It's always helpful. You can send them to the Erotic Service Providers Union website. Has a page so that you can donate online via credit card. I've also got the San Francisco Libertarian Party is taking checks to specifically target this issue. Our mailing address is 2215-R Market Street, number 170, San Francisco, California, zip code 94114. Another thing you can do is, you know, anytime that there's an article on this, and there's been all kinds of things published online already, if you do a search for decriminalized prostitution in San Francisco 2008, for example, you'll turn up a bunch of articles, and a lot of them have places where readers can weigh in and comment. Positive comments on these, you know, comment sections of these articles are very helpful, letters to the editor, especially to San Francisco publications, because we need to, you know, get the word out to San Francisco voters who are going to be actually voting on this. And one of the things that we're going to do with contributions is fund ballot arguments. The deadline for which is coming up August 14th is to submit paid ballot arguments. So your donations can help get good pro-decriminalization arguments into the voter handbook, which will be mailed to hundreds of thousands of San Francisco registered voters.
Yeah, I think that, you know, donating is one of the big issues. You know, donating to this particular campaign financially, you know, not only to get this measure passed at the local level, but, you know, to be a part of the larger plan of implementing decriminalization at the state level, at the state and the national level. And, you know, that's what people can expect when they contribute. You know, the Internet is a great place, and educating people on what our issues are locally here and educating people on the larger issues of sex worker rights and sexual freedom rights and equal protection under the law is what everybody can be talking about, blogging about, and using the media. You know, this campaign is going to be won and lost in the media, you know, is my opinion about it. And getting accurate information out there about what this particular ballot measure is about is really important, and we need everybody's help about that.
And you're going to have a press conference on Tuesday, July 22nd, which is also kind of a kickoff rally for the campaign. So can you talk a little about that and the location in case people want to participate? We'll also be broadcasting that live on XBN.
Oh, terrific. Thank you, Holly. Yeah, that will be this coming Tuesday at 4 o'clock p.m. In front of City Hall in San Francisco on the Polk Street side. It's near the intersection of Polk and McAllister. If you're not familiar with the area, if you're coming from out of town, everyone's encouraged to show up. We're urging sex worker rights supporters to wear red, bring a red umbrella if you've got one. And we'll have a bunch of speakers, including probably at least one member of the Board of Supervisors and other supporters. If you get musical instruments, bring them. It's going to be fun. We're meeting at Chevy's afterwards to have drinks and socialize.
So it's basically going to be a press conference and kickoff rally will be at City Hall in San Francisco, 4 p.m. Pacific time. And then afterwards.
Yeah, tomorrow, by the way.
tomorrow at 4 p.m. Pacific
time.
It's
coming up pretty quickly, yeah.
Yeah, and then afterwards, you can go over to Chevy's. Okay. We have a couple of more minutes left. I'd like to thank both of you for participating. And do either of you have anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I just thank you for all your good work, Holly, and everybody's good work over there in Chicago this past weekend. You know, we all really wanted to be there, but, you know, we were in the middle of doing this. And, you know, there's lots of good work going on across the country by sex industry workers and our supporters. And, you know, being in solidarity together is where we, you know, is what we need to be doing right now. And we have a lot of differences amongst ourselves. We have everybody's got their particular, you know, position on the industry or in their part that they play in it, but now is the time to you know, to act in solidarity with each other and ask everybody else to be in solidarity with recognizing that, you know, we have to have our right to negotiate for our labor and our work conditions.
Of which I'd really like to mention just quickly also another organization that's done a lot of good work and that spearheaded the Berkeley measure in 2004 that Holly mentioned earlier, which is Sex Workers Outreach Project. And if you live in other cities across the country, that's a good group to know about because they've established chapters in a bunch of different cities. If you go to swop-usa.org, for Sex Workers Outreach Project, you can find out more information about them and join or start a chapter where you live, essentially.
Exactly. There are sex workers advocacy groups doing such good work, and I think the comment about solidarity was so important because it was that solidarity that was needed to really successfully get this initiative on the ballot. I don't know that any one person would have been able to go out there themselves and do all the educating by themselves and gather all the signatures by themselves. So it was, I think that was just a great example of solidarity within the movement, and hopefully the solidarity will continue and will continue to make more progress, because I think this is such a huge success, such a huge step in the right direction that this initiative made it onto the ballot. Now the thing is getting it passed. But anyway, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Holly. Great work.
Yeah.
And thanks to everybody for listening.
Go out there and
hello?